Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. This is Michael Rowe. Welcome to episode 3 of the Games at Work podcast. This week, it's just Andy and myself, and we're going to talk to you about where's the work in it and other ideas as we go through and brainstorm during this podcast. Andy, welcome.
Hi, Michael. How's it going?
It's going well. I understand you've had a fun week with developers.
Well, I've kind of had two lots of fun this week, actually. I've done, on the weekend, we did a hackathon in London all around green themes. So we were trying to find ways of using or looking at ways of using environmental data and various other APIs online to do cool new hacks. So that was all weekend with no sleeping.
Oh, excellent.
There wasn't supposed to be any sleeping. There was, I think, some sleeping in the end.
If people nodded off while coding, I guess that was allowed temporarily until somebody went over and smacked them upside the head.
Exactly right. And then, I've done a whole bunch of things. So then I did a university careers fair on Monday. On Monday, which was good. It was fun. And then I did a big meeting around open source on Tuesday. And then Wednesday and Thursday, the last 2 days, I have been at the Monkey Gras Red Monk Brew event in London, which has all been about developers.
I was trying to figure out how to pronounce it. Was it Monk Gras, Monkey Gras? And now that you've said it, I now know the official way.
Well, some of our colleagues from Texas are here and have been at the event as well, and they keep insisting it's called Monkey Grass. But
no, it's Gras.
I think the S is silent.
So. Mardi Gras. And I know that same group, Red Monk, had done a thing in, I guess it was in Maine last year on Monktoberfest.
Yeah, so they're doing a series of events called the Red Monk Brews Conferences, and which actually started off as a joke. They started off as a joke tweet.
And someone said, I'll go.
Yeah, exactly right. So wouldn't it be funny to get the conference series that started as a joke is the subtitle of the conferences. They got a bunch of folks together in Maine. And then this week extended it, so it was 2 days instead of just one, and got a bunch of folks together in London. And it's been really, really good. It was the best content I've ever seen at a conference, really.
Yeah,
we had we had the founder of Bitly, we had the founder of Lanyard, we had the founder of Untapped, the loads and loads of data about developers and hacking, the lady from one of the telcos, we had a phone gap discussion, we had just an unbelievable amount of stuff, loads of stuff about GitHub, Jenkins, distributed development, what the new startup technology stack is for new apps. Great discussion about Eclipse and other open source foundations. I mean, it was just on nonstop awesome content, really funny. And the genius part about it, of course, was that it was punctuated by regular beer tasting.
Oh, excellent. I was following the tweets, and it was just amazing seeing some of the content that people were talking about, and things that I've been looking at in kind of in the day job around phone gap you mentioned, Jenkins, Git, etc. All very important things. Considering our last episode and my attempted joke at a self-censored contest around Git. I think it's nice to see that one tie in.
Well, the statistics speak for themselves. Git is by far and away, GitHub in particular, is by far and away the most popular open source development hub and code repository in the world. And it's just amazing. And of course, it is the first real product to fundamentally have social baked in. Now, I mean, we've had a few other things with kind of social strands to them, but really the absolutely social nature of that product from the get-go has really driven some very interesting behaviors. And there's been some fascinating statistics as well around the choice of languages that people are using based on that as well. So Steve O'Grady from Red Monk did a great talk really covering both actually the rise and fall of different development languages, but also talking about the dramatic drop in cost since about 2006 of starting up a new company, basically, which was fascinating because you were able to correlate that quite closely with the rise of Amazon EC2,
yep,
and the rise of Twitter.
Wow.
As a piping and a grapevine kind of discussion around new products, so you don't have to spend quite so much on promoting these things. So stunning stuff.
Wow. And you kind of dropped for almost a split second. So this social aspect is in GitHub and Git, or was it another thing? I missed the specific.
Oh, yeah. So GitHub, yep, is fundamentally social from the get go, right? So it is it's a social network around coding, right? So whereas, yep, Git itself, the tool itself, is, you know, it's very, very sophisticated, cool source control system built by Linus Torvalds, who obviously invented Linux. But, you know, it's fundamentally a social network around code, and that's enabled some very, very interesting to come through.
I think it's pretty amazing. I know there are companies out there that specialize in trying to talk about the voice of the developer by leveraging, you know, surveys, and the fact that that there's so much real data. I mean, not surveys, but real data coming out of GitHub of, you know, as you mentioned, language usage, various adoption curves over time, et cetera, is I think much more meaningful than we talked to 500 developers around the world and they said everybody uses Prolog for their development.
Right.
Difference between data and surveys. Right, actual absolutely. Analytics and just a survey. Very cool. Very cool. So I actually spent last week at a totally different environment. People who may have followed my Twitter stream or other content streams, I was out at Macworld/iWorld, the newly rebranded Apple fanboy love fest.
Yes, you were loving getting you some Apple fanboy loving, right?
Yeah, it was strange. It was very, very different than all the prior ones that I've gone to, which were very kind of product centric, big company announcement centric. This was a community event. Yeah, it was really cool. The community nature of it was very different, and I had a chance to, you know, talk to a lot of different people out there at a very, very different approach than in the past, where it was product-centric or company-centric. But I did get to meet up with Nick from Real Mac Software, a friend of yours.
Yeah, they're really good guys.
Yeah, and also got a chance to talk to the Podfather.
Again, your second time.
Well, multiple times. I think I can't remember. Wow. One of the big challenges. And one of the big challenges that he and I talked about was the dearth of meaningful podcasts about app developers.
Okay.
And
do you really think that?
He thinks that. He says he's tried before and it hasn't really, you know.
Oh, okay. So on his network he's tried? Or
not only on his, but on other ones that he's reached around to.
I think there's some great podcasts out there on that subject. The Changelog is one really, really good one. It depends what you mean by app developers, of course, because, you know, the word app has become so overused and misused. Let me just have a quick look at my podcast folder, but the changelog is certainly one. There's This Developer's Life, which is also awesome. There's some really good podcasts out there, but it's not always just. Oh, and The Web Ahead as well is a great one. It's not always just about iPhone, right? When you talk about app, though, right? So.
Yep. No, really talking about, you know, building a developer community.
I mean,
around
is a good one on his
cross
own,
platforms, right? And as I think I mentioned in the past, I'm actually looking at trying to build one around a local, you know, podcasts have the ability to be extremely local, too. So given the community of app developers just in the Research Triangle Park area, there's an opportunity there. So it's interesting the different perspectives and the different communities that do or do not overlap, right?
Right.
And from that perspective, you know, how do you approach and address that? And so, well, one way that people approach that is through social games that allow you to identify and connect with a community in different ways. And I know we talked on our first episode about social games like check-in services. And as we were prepping the show today, you mentioned one that you used recently to talk about beer sampling.
Well, yeah, so this was actually the official app, social network of Monkey Gras. So it's an app called Untapped. The founder spoke at Monkey Gras. And it's all about checking into your favorite brews and discovering new ones.
Yeah, it's funny. We were trying to figure out, because I could have swore I had it, and we couldn't find each other on it. And then I realized that I had long since deleted it because, you know, I wasn't really using it. And then we realized that I was actually still on it. So I re-downloaded it because I wanted to see the beers that you tried. I think...
Well, they were all fairly local British ones, I think. I
mean, yeah.
I'd be curious to see whether you find any of those turn up in your local.
Well, what I think's interesting here from a where's the work in it perspective, right? So here is a social networking site or social networking tool with the idea of just sharing information about beer, right? However, one of the interesting aspects that I find is if I look across my larger network and find, you know, people using this app and could show that when I'm in London, I drink a lot of, you know, beer X that you've recommended. And when other people who are friends of mine are in that area, there's, I don't want to say large consumption of, but there's a lot of desire to try that beer. There could be a way that beer distributors will then get information about what microbrews that actually can ship could be important for new markets.
Right.
And so that I think that's kind of cool and interesting as a way of helping the small microbrews, startup brews, actually expand their footprint into new areas and know that they have a potential market there. Now, of course, it's going to require, you know, 100 million people using this app, which I'm sure the guys at Untappd would not mind.
Right. No, it's been, you know, the other thing he was talking about is the fact that you can now connect, the breweries themselves can now connect up their own apps, their own information, I should say, to their database. So there's a good way of them getting themselves known and networking and having their information shared. So, yeah, it sounds like a really interesting little idea.
Yeah, and so, you know, going back to the theme of this week's show of where's the work in it, last episode we talked about where's the game in things, and I still think that some of the examples were a little stretched, like gaming yours and my banking habits. there's a I can't remember what movie it's from, but oh, not a movie, Saturday Night Live making fun of a prior president. Not gonna bet. Wouldn't be prudent. however, I think where's the work in it is actually pretty interesting. And there's an example that I put in the show notes that I think many people may be either familiar with or even potentially played it, and that's the idea of the game that Google put out some years ago. I think in 2006 is when they started it, of the Google Image Labeler, right?
Which is now dead, right?
It was discontinued late last year, maybe middle of last year, around September,
mm-hmm,
I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was a way of improving the accuracy of the Google search algorithm for images, but it was still a game from the perspective of it had an entertainment value and people were playing it to play the game, not right. Necessarily say, hey, I really want to improve Google search algorithm. Mm-hmm. And what it allowed to happen by, you know, doing this game is identify or define the metadata around images and patterns in images. So, for example, if there's a picture of, a small child playing with a ball, you might label that ball. I might label that child. Someone else might label it play. And over time, as this image would pop up, or images of a similar nature would pop up, you would start building up metadata and patterns of how do you identify a ball? When would this picture show up when somebody does a search on play? And I find that kind of interesting from a perspective, and it may almost be a little obvious on the work in it. But what do you think, Andy?
Yeah, I think absolutely there's value in having kind of I'm going to use that word again, aren't I? Gamifying that that whole idea and that activity. It's certainly a good way of drawing in people that are committed and passionate about helping to improve that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think the challenge, really, whenever you look at a game where the underlying result is the desire to improve some work process, is to make it engaging and actually entertaining, right? I mean, I could throw up two images and say, please enter metadata, right? Except for those extremely passionate people who want to flag metadata, it's not going to have much adoption, right?
Right. Yeah, I think you're right about that. It's difficult to say, you know, this is something that that I should invest time in, because what am I getting out of it? Especially when ultimately it's just a bunch of benefit to a large corporation, right? So it's kind of interesting as to how you measure inspire, I guess.
Inspire, that's a good word. I like that word.
People to take part.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting games out there right now that I know our good buddy Michael Martin plays is Tiny Tower.
Yes.
And
which has recently been ripped off by guys.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah, the Zynga guys, I believe it was,
ripped
it off. And there was a little bit of I think it was an open letter in a newspaper or something, or maybe just on a website of, you know, wow, we're really flattered. It was a great little post. However, what I've been trying to figure out is where's the work in that one, because I know there's the social aspect of competing of, you know, my tower is bigger than your tower, and we know there's the financial gain from the gaming company perspective of in-app purchases so that you can speed up the building of your tower. But what's the underlying thing that you could get out of that that drives incremental value to a business process or to the company? And other than in-app sales, I haven't figured this one out yet, and there has to be, because it's not fun. It is not a fun game. I played it for a while, and it's just as quote fun as Farmville, where you're just competing on
resources and things.
On resources, yeah. Mm. And it's not really about resource management. I mean, that could be an interesting angle of it. You know, there is an aspect of it where you're trying to balance the needs of your tiny tower tenants, whether they be commercial tenants or people who live there. And so you build stores or nightclubs or restaurants or some commercial enterprise, and they have up to three different things that they can sell, and you have to invest in buying content for them and selling content with a certain profit margin. And then you have people who live in the tiny tower who have certain desires and needs around where they would like to work, what makes them happy, as well as are they hungry? Do they want to go and have Chinese food, as an example?
Okay.
And so the basic gameplay as you're building your tower is to make sure that your people are happy, that your businesses are thriving, and I guess it may be teaching the player something about, you know, supply and demand.
Well, you're not really telling me anything that sounds much different from popular SimCity, all of those kinds of things. What's the difference other than the format in terms of tower versus city?
So I used to play SimCity. I don't anymore. It got boring. Right. But that was a resource management game.
Okay.
And to some degree, the ability to manage needs and wants from a standpoint of tax rates, et cetera. It actually had a very specific, I don't want to use the word agenda, but an opinion on tax rates.
Right.
The lower your tax rates, the better it would do within certain constraints.
Okay.
And the thing that I liked about SimCity, very different place, mm-hmm. was the ability for disasters, natural disasters to occur, or, you know, aliens would come in, or Godzilla would come in and stomp up a couple of buildings, which made it had a little bit of a fun aspect to it. It wasn't just a management sim, right?
Okay.
Tiny Tower, I haven't seen that at all, right? And so the little fun part of how do you react to an unexpected event is removed.
Right.
It's very linear, and right. It doesn't seem to teach anything but very, very basic, give people what they want methods.
Dang, nabbit.
Dang, nabbit. By the way, as a quick aside, I did find, you know, you were testing out new delicious beers.
Yes.
When I was out in San Francisco last week, I found a new coffee shop that I like.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, it's called Blue Bottle Coffee.
Wow.
And they do this technique called a coffee siphon.
So are you going to... are you going to be abandoning Bean Traders at this point?
I did buy
Bottle Coffee, now the official podcast coffee of Games at Work.
No. They're not local.
Okay.
They are only on the in the San Francisco area, from what I can tell. But it was really good. I mean, it was really good. I did buy a couple. I bought a pound and brought home with me, and I'll make that soon. You know, Bean Traders is still the official coffee because they're local, they're good, and I like them. So
sweet. Nice.
Anyway, sorry. Didn't mean to digress on coffee, but, you know, coffee is an important thing, and yes, I did.
It is. It is. So, in fact, you know, again, James, governor who was running Monkey Grass, got some really good folks to bring us some nice coffee as well, some craft coffees at the event. So it was such a well put together, thought through event. It was really good.
They need to come to the Triangle and do something, and I will be there.
Well, there was a discussion that the next one would be Monkey Morocco, but I don't think that's really true. So.
Yeah, I could see that. So what other game have you been playing lately?
A little bit of Skyrim.
Oh, just a little?
I only just started, really. I played it at a friend's house, and then I got my own copy, and I've just started having a go at it. And really, I've just maybe logged a couple of hours, which is really just the introductory section. So I started doing that. What else? Not too much. I mean, I've been honestly way too busy to do that recently.
Nothing new on the mobile devices.
On the mobile devices, that's a great question. I don't think I've really got anything new on the iPhone. The 3DS, I'm continuing to put some time in on Mario Kart because it's one of those ones with all the Nintendo unlocks as you progress to get all the additional bits of the car and so on. So that's good fun.
So what do you think? I hate to do this to Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Is there any work in that? Is it a physics simulation? Are we learning anything about?
No, I don't. It's pretty basic in terms of, you know, that kind of thing. It's not like, you know, Gran Turismo physics simulation. I think the work is really just working through all the different challenges to get all the unlocks. And I think, you know, a few folks like EatPred and I have agreed that, you know, that's a very typical standard Nintendo way of operating these days, is to create these kind of games that somewhat rewards you for continued effort, but equally they can become an effort.
Yeah, I know. I've found that with Angry Birds, right? They keep releasing new content on their seasonal stuff, and they just keep making it harder. And I've actually almost stopped messing with it completely. It's not fun anymore.
That's a shame.
I mean, I like to blow things up every once in a while with it, but and they add new content from levels as well as new birds.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that was that did come up over the weekend, and again at the Monkey Girl conference. So, have you heard of Amy?
What is it?
Amy, AMEE.
No.
So they have a platform for sharing, basically an API for sharing emissions and power data.
Uh huh.
And they're a UK startup, but they are trying to provide metrics that are, you know, international, based on as much information as they can scrape from various national power grids and so on. So they've got some great APIs. And one of the things they did at a recent developer event was they've been running a number of these green hack days, was they combined that with Minecraft.
Oh, cool.
So the interesting thing there was, they actually made the Minecraft environment, you know, deteriorate as you burned more carbon, for example.
Oh, cool!
So there's a great video that I'm just trying to find on the blog, which shows exactly how that worked.
Yeah. So have you heard of OPA?
Nope.
So one of the things that I saw at the I Love Fan Fest was a new open source social platform, development platform for creating the back end servers for social networking apps.
Okay.
Called OPA, which growing up in Germany, OPA is also the name for your grandfather.
Grandfather, that's right, yeah.
So I had a brief chat with one of the founders of that, I'll put that link in the show notes also, because I put the wrong one in there, it was kind of interesting because it actually greatly simplifies the back end server processing and development. To hook things up in whether that's mobile or you know, some other distributed game, from a standpoint of adding the back-end social stuff. So pretty interesting. I've downloaded the platform to start playing with, we'll have to check it out. But I don't know if any of our listeners have looked at OPA or have any comments. Would love to hear from that.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. This kind of thing's been tried a few times, I think, hasn't it? With what was the one from the guy that set up Netscape, Andreessen?
Yeah.
Ning, right? So is it similar to Ning or?
No. This is so. Well, I don't know. What I've seen on Ning was actual platform, the Ning platform that was used for certain things. This is actually kind of the API level of that.
Oh, okay. I see. Right.
So you can write your own back-end processing fairly easily and, you know, throw it up on EC2 as a server as you've developed your game with its social aspects and you want to scale out. It does all your scale-out processing without having to code for that at all.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it really does sound like something that might be appropriate for developers listening to this podcast to look at. I've just discovered them. I just had a chance to talk to the guys there. And I will know more as I get a chance to actually start playing with it.
Cool. Well, let us know what you think.
I hope to have time to program with it.
Yeah, you are the developer.
Well, I try. But you're the one who actually does hack days. Touché. I know we're getting pretty close to time here for this week's episode. What else is going on, Andy?
What else is going on? So a few weeks ago, I saw our good friend E. Predator speaking at a BCS, British Computer Society event. And I don't think I mentioned this last episode. Or did I?
I don't think
so.
Did we
discuss this before? No, I don't think so. So Ian did a really, really nice talk, which really kind of brought together a number of threads of things that we've all discussed over the course of the last sort of 5-6 years. Everything around kind of virtual worlds and real world crossover, increasing importance of software, the ability to 3D print and prototype, the play elements with toys like Skylanders, which have got both a real world and a virtual world element to them, and how people learn. There's loads of things in there. It was a really, really nice talk, and he kind of brought it all together at the end, demonstrating, the whole kind of augmentation of real world objects with virtual objects, the ability to simulate, the ability to really narrate a whole story. So really enjoyed that.
Very cool. One of the things that I sat in at the Love Fest was the real CSI, mm-hmm. and it was the chief coroner for Sacramento County in California talking about how they use various technologies along with the Society for or the organization, I can't remember the first phrase, of missing and exploited children to uncover and identify bodies. The reason I bring it up is it ties directly into, I know one thing that EPRED's been very keen on for a long time, which is 3D printing. And they explained the state of the art of facial reconstruction based off of bones.
Right.
And how they're leveraging 3D printers to reconstruct the skull, even in pieces. And, they use the computer to kind of capture and remodel it and then actually mm-hmm. print it out and then use that as the base for building out the facial models, both from a software perspective and physically from a clay perspective. It was interesting because the speaker, I had a chance to have a brief chat with him about it, was talking about, it's still a really, really expensive process to do 3D printing, blah, 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 blah. And I mentioned the MakerBot for creating your own 3D printer. And, you had never heard of it. And I'm like, dude, you ought to check out. There's some very, very inexpensive ways, relatively speaking, to get started in this space and to build out your content. I was actually thinking back, looking at the MakerBot right now. I think the whole thing can be purchased now for under like $1,500 US. And my last laser printer I bought, which has been years and years ago, was $1,400. We're now at the point where this type of capability to extend the creative process is getting back down into the consumer pricing level, even though in the enterprise or in the business world, or in this case, the criminal investigation world, I mean, they're still talking $20,000-$30,000 as an entry point for the device.
Right.
It was pretty cool, and also it was nice to help out our government and understand how to save some money.
Well, another event that I've just been asked to attend, and I've been hoping that I'll be able to go along to, is on the similar topic, is a make-a-thon. So it's a bit like a hackathon. It's in a 2-day kind of full no sleeping event kind of thing, which is a couple of weeks' time. In fact, it starts on a Friday, so it might interfere with recording, but we'll see. I might be at a podcast from the Makeathon, but we'll see what happens.
You could make your own microphone.
Well, out of Sugru, which is one of the sponsors, maybe.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I know we're out of time, and Andy, as always, it's lots of fun to have these discussions and hopefully get feedback. We've been getting a nice start of comments and threads on our blog,
Excellent.
And we really appreciate people joining into the conversation, and we'd like to get your ideas and thoughts. As this new podcast format and content matures and changes, kind of getting back to our roots, as we mentioned. We'd really like to hear from you. Also, do us a favor and go to iTunes or your other appropriate pod pitching services and rate us, comment, subscribe. We'd like to get your feedback. It's important to us to hear as much as we can from you.
Definitely.
I think that's it. Andy, you want to add?
No. Just thanks for listening. Thanks for discovering us if you have. And we hope you enjoyed it and hope you listen again. So see ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and you can follow us at Twitter at GamesAtWork_BIZ.